Act 4, Good Whites, Bad Whites. This next assessment of our state of national racial healing from radio producers Cecilia Weissman and Christina Egloff with Jay Allison about a woman named Carolyn Wren Shannon and her neighbors.
My mother was telling us that one time when we were younger, my father was very prejudiced, and I came home from school with this friend, and he was like on the recliner with a newspaper, and I said, "Mom, can my friend stay over for supper?" And my father like dropped the paper to look to see who it was, and it was a little black girl. She said my father almost swallowed his false teeth. And she's like, "Honey, I don't really think that's a good idea." She said, "I come in," and my father was like horrified, because I really didn't see things. I don't know. I was colorblind, really, till that incident, and then we kind of got the rules that that wasn't accepted. Who are you calling? My mother and father are both from Charlestown. All my great-grandparents are from Ireland, all four of them. And that's how the majority of this community works. Most of them, when they come over on the boat, they all were together and kind of settled together, and that's sort of how this community has stayed the same. You'll find that a lot of the people in this community are related, because I think there's some security having family around, and people are proud that they're Irish and they're proud that they're Catholic. And I think people, they stick to their own. Like when we were in grammar school, there was one teen who was Protestant, and we goofed on him because he didn't believe in the same thing as us. Of course, no one understood what a Protestant was, just that he was different.
Okay. When you know, sing.
Right. Are you ready, girls?
Stop.
Go ahead. Come on, follow her lead.
We are the girls from Charlestown you hear so much about. Most everybody looks at us whenever we go out. We're noted for our reputation, all the things you do. But what the hell do we care? The boys are naughty too.
The drink with the straws, you know, the little...
Yeah. So tell Warren.
We are here at my Aunt Mary Ellen's house on Elm Street in Charlestown. I'm here with my Aunt Linda, my cousin Patty, my cousin Donna, my sister-in-law Mimi, my cousin Marianne, my Aunt Barbara, my cousin Sheila, and my Aunt Mary Ellen. My grandmother, who is the matriarch of this wonderful family, Mary Wren, wonderful woman. She had 7 children, and she had 32 grandchildren and 43 great-grandchildren. I'd say about 70% is still local.
Most people don't understand it if they're not from the town. There's always that Charlestown, like either they want to be, they wish they were, they don't understand what it's like.
My mother was telling us that's what happened when we were younger.
Everybody
my father
everybody.
Was very prejudiced.
So it's a kind of strength
I come home
that you don't
school.
Find in other areas.
I mean, to have 17,000 people and the majority of them have major relatives around, it makes a big difference in this community.
Charlestown is home.
Yeah. Once Boston occurred, that wonderful year of 1976, when the federal government mandated busing, court-ordered busing, my junior year was totally insane. Everything changed. There were new faces. People were never exposed to minorities, and all of a sudden, you're thrown in a classroom, and there's turmoil in the streets, and there's turmoil in your house, and there's turmoil in the news, and the city's erupted with racial violence, and everyone's following everyone. Whatever the crowd does, if they throw rocks, you throw rocks. If they beat up a black person, then you stand and watch. Whereas as a Catholic, you realize that you don't treat someone like that. But everyone forgot everything. It was like this total mayhem. School wasn't the same. There were metal detectors put in the classroom, in the entrance of the schools. There were policemen everywhere. At night, they would burn cars. It was total crazy. There was a major rally on Boston City Hall Plaza, and a black man was attacked with an American flag because he was black and walked in front of their rally, which was all white. They speared him with the American flag. It was a horrible, horrible scene. It was all over, like, the news, like, across the world. Charlestown, Southie, they're racist. Boston is a place full of hate. And it was. It was.
Just started. Evidence is seen that we're going to defeat, so come on, everybody, to the town, EB.
Guys, come on, let's go.
1, 2, 3, 4, clap. 1, 2, clap. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, clap. 1, 2, clap.
When I was in junior high, the biggest thing was to get up to the high school because that was where your mother went and your father went and those teachers were still there and you could still talk to your mother about the bathroom story. But that doesn't occur anymore because there is no Charlestown High like it used to be. And now the school itself is predominantly black. My kids will probably go to parochial schools. They won't do Charlestown High cheers. They may do, you know, St. Clemens cheers, but... Like, when my aunts get together, they all sing Charlestown High songs, and it's like a little pep rally when we're all at a family gathering. But that won't happen for my kids, and I think that's kind of sad.
Put your hands in your hips, and we'll do it regular. Okay, put them up, close your feet. Say, ready?
Go. Team means victory. Anyway.
Hey, very good, girl.
Tony Teeny.
We're going to go to cheerleading today? Now we're going to go down to cheerleading?
What happened on the Oprah show was she had on a white man who was married to a white woman. He disowned his children for being associated with black men, and then in fact disowned his grandchildren because they were black in them. And I was saying, that's a disgrace. That's your blood. You don't disown anyone. And Danny said...
I don't know. What did I say?
You said that you thought he was right.
I said, I don't know what I would do. But I understood his feelings. So you wouldn't mind your daughter's marrying a black guy? Or...
I didn't say that, which we have discussed at great length, that I would. That is definitely a fear of mine, that I would like to think I'm open-minded about race, more so than I've ever been. But if it came down to my daughter's choosing another race, I don't think I'd be happy with that.
I mean, I'm definitely, I wouldn't say a racist, but I had definitely bitter feelings towards blacks. I was raised that way, too. I mean, my father's an Archie Bunker, so I think it rubs off on you. Like, I would never deliberately, I would never say anything to my girls, but they'll learn. They'll learn what's theirs and, you know, what's your own and things like that. Just growing up around the same type of people. They'll look at anyone that's not like them differently. I don't have to tell them that. It sounds ignorant, but I had no problem. I like the way I grew up, and Carolyn's out of the same mold, and I don't have a problem with that. I'm not going to push it on them at all, but I hope someday they marry an Irish Catholic boy, and, you know, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Other people say that's being racial. I think it's natural to like your own kind of people.
You sing too, Bridgie. Help her out.
I love you. You love me. We're a happy family. It's a great big hug. Get a kiss from me. Dad, you, won't you say you love me too?
Yeah. You know, I think it's a rare breed of person. You must have to grow up somewhere where... You walk down the street and there's a black kid, a Chinese kid, a white kid, and a Puerto Rican kid playing together. I just can't even imagine that. That's some kind of made-up fairy tale, I think, where everyone gets along together. You know, I can't imagine it.
Life teaches you, sometimes very painfully. And I think that's your best teacher anyway. Like, no one can tell you not to be racist. And they can't tell you to like your black neighbor. You have to learn. So I think it's a person's choice. So you can choose to be ignorant, or you can choose to be fair. I was captain of the cheerleaders, and I remember Miss Kastner, which was the cheerleading coach, was also the phys ed director, and she said she hadn't chose the captains yet, and this was like something I wanted my whole life. This is my big goal in life, to be cheerleading captain. And she said to me one day, if a black girl tries out for cheerleading, will you... except her. And I thought to myself, I'm going to be a jerk if I don't go along with the crowd. It was a very difficult decision for me, and I knew this could jeopardize whether I become captain or not. And I said I wouldn't accept her. She put her head down, and she walked away. So the day of cheerleading tryouts, she came into the room of all the girls, and she said, traditionally, Charleston High has had two cheerleading captains. This year, there'll only be one. And I put my head down, and I started to cry, because I knew I blew it. It was like my first experience with race and making the wrong decision. So we're all in the room, and she says, the cheerleading captain for this year is Carolyn Wren. I started bawling my eyes out, and I was like, oh, my God. And I looked up at her, and she knew that I had made a wrong choice. I knew I made the wrong choice, but I made it from my heart because I was raised in a house where race wasn't accepted.
Disgrace. It was embarrassing. I think they're embarrassing, the Charleston High cheerleaders. Because they don't cheer like your regular cheerleaders anyway. They cheer like jigaboos or something. I don't know. Carol, that is not cheering. It's bogue. They're like clapping and singing and like getting down with their cheers. It's not even.
It's jive cheering.
It's jive cheering, yeah.
It's not your good old cheerleader.
It's not what they teach with cheerleading camp. The All-American cheerleader. It's not that style. It's more ethnic. It's more cultural. It's very different than what we're used to.
Definitely. My sisters win cheer for Charleston High because of it.
I can't even think of a cheer that we could compare it to, other than how funky is your chicken.
No, they do that. We don't need no music to cheer. And they stamp their feet, and they do like this little dance.
And they feel like,
oh, we need...
Oh, you want to just slap them and say, stop, you look so foolish.
But that's all they know. That's what they're taught. And that's what they're excited to do.
Nobody's excited to hand them. Everybody just wishes they'd go away.
I remember sitting beside a girl in school, and she had an afro, and we had common pins in sewing. It was home ec. And we used to put paper at the end of the common pin and toss the common pin, and the paper would allow it to weigh it down so you could send it. And we would, like, put them into her hair. And this was like hitting her head. These common pins were, we tortured that girl because she was different and because she had an afro and none of us did because she was black. And I was a part of that. I was as racist as the next one. It's not something I'm proud of. And I think working with teenagers, it's a constant effort to remind them that you don't judge someone by the color of their skin. It's going to be on racism. We realize it's a very sensitive issue. We're not here to try to change anybody's mind. All we want to do is raise your consciousness about it. We want to talk about it. We want to have a lot of fun with it. A couple of rules. Watch your mouth. The swearing. A little respect. You can, of course, speak your own opinions, but with a little taste. Understand? Okay. We're going to start. If you asked me when I was 10, would I be working for the city with other black people, I would have told you were crazy, that I'm above them, and that I don't work with niggas. That's what I would have told you when I was 10. When I first took this job, I actually had trouble working with people across the city because I was really racist. But I was in the high school when there was busing, so there was a lot of racial riots. It was total mayhem every day. I hated them. I used to throw things in their afros. I used to put things in their hair. I hated them. I didn't want to look at them. I didn't want to talk to them. I was the class vice president and almost lost the post because I wouldn't accept black students in Charleston High. I've taken incredible strides as far as accepting. I've matured. I'm educated. It's very different than when I was 17 and filled with a lot of hate. And was surrounded by a lot of people who hated because of the color of their skin. Okay, this warm-up, girl, guys, you need to listen. This warm-up is called Motion Circle.
So what I want you to do is walk, spread out a little more. And I want you to walk. Come this way.
Walk
in a circle. Okay, now I'm going to tell you to do something. I want you to all of a sudden do it, okay? Walk like you're stuck in quicksand.
What?
Stuck in quicksand.
You can't move.
Walk like you're Irish. Okay, keep walking. Walk as if you're carrying something heavy. Okay, walk like you're black. My father, who used to be incredibly racist, and has grown out of that, and I can't even believe it. He's just not the same person, and he accepts people for what they are, which was very important for the rest of, for all of us to see. Because you lead by example, and if you can't lead by example, it's such an important part of, I think, each family. And I would say, on the whole, that the majority of racism is learned in the home. It's what you're brought up with. It's what you hear. It's what you're told. And it's how you're raised. And if you go out and you think that battering someone because they're black, then I would bet my paycheck that in your home, racism is a serious issue and also a serious problem. And it was for me. And it's taken me a long, long time to overcome it. Although this, I still have fears. Although I'm open-minded and educated, I still have some of those fears.
That story was first produced in a slightly longer form for WGBH in Jay Allison's Life Story series, engineering by Jane Pippick. Cecilia Weissman did the original interviews.